Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Anglican Church of the Good Shepherd in Calgary. I'm the Reverend Derwin Kostanak, the priest of the parish, and on this 21st Sunday after the day of Pentecost, I'd like to welcome you to this sermon video. Last week, we did things a little bit differently. Because we were dealing with the theme of the creation and the fact that we are acknowledging the God who is responsible for that creation, I chose to deliver my sermon in a different location altogether. Rather than seeing me continue to stand here in the nave of our parish, I had gone outside to the Weaselhead Flats of North Glenmore Park and delivered my sermon there. It seemed to make sense. If we're going to talk about that creation, why not actually do that talking in the midst of it? Well, this week we're going to do the same kind of thing. So after the proclamation of the word through the reading of the scriptures, you'll find this sermon being delivered from another outdoor location. Just something to keep our focus on what it is that we're talking about. And today we'll start to delve in a little bit into what we see in Job 38 and Psalm 104. And so with that to look forward to, let us turn our attention in prayer to our God of creation and bow our hearts together in this way. Giving and forgiving God, you created the good earth and blessed it. Give us glad and generous hearts so that we may rejoice and give thanks for the abundance of your creation, the depths of your mercy, and your care for all. Blessed are you, O God, source of all being, eternal word, and Holy Spirit, forever and ever. Amen. And so now we turn our attention to the proclamation of the word.
A reading from the book of Job. Then the Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind. Who is this that darkens counsel by words without knowledge? Gird up your loins like a man. I will question you, and you shall declare to me. Where were you when I laid the foundation of the earth? Tell me, if you have understanding. Who determined its measurements? Surely you know. Or who stretched the line upon it? On what were its bases sunk? Or who laid its cornerstone when the morning stars sang together and all the heavenly beings shouted for joy? Can you bind the chains of the Pleiades or loose the cords of Orion? Can you lead forth the Maseroth in their season, or can you guide the bear with its children? Do you know the ordinances of the heavens? Can you establish their rule on the earth? Can you lift up your voice to the clouds so that a flood of waters may cover you? Can you send forth lightning so that they may go and say to you, here we are? Who has put wisdom in the inward parts, or given understanding to the mind? Who has the wisdom to number the clouds? Or who can tilt the waterskins of the heavens when the dust runs into a mass and the clouds cling together? Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church. The Holy Gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ according to Mark. James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came forward to Jesus and said to him, Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask of you. And he said to them, What is it you want me to do for you? And they said to him, Grant us to sit, one at your right hand and one at your left, in your glory. But Jesus said to them, You do not know what you're asking. Are you able to drink the cup that I drink, or be baptized with the baptism that I am baptized with? They replied, We are able. Then Jesus said to them, The cup that I drink, you will drink. And with the baptism with which I am baptized, you will be baptized. But to sit at my right hand or at my left is not mine to grant, but it is for those for whom it has been prepared. When the 10 heard this, they began to be angry with James and John. So Jesus called them and said to them, You know that among the Gentiles, those whom they recognize as the rulers lord it over them, and their great ones are tyrants over them. But it is not so among you. But whoever wishes to become great among you must be your servant, and whoever wishes to be first among you must be slave of all. For the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life a ransom for many. The Gospel of Christ.
Hello again. Just like last week when we shot the sermon outside overlooking the Glenmore Reservoir and the Weaselhead Flats, today once again we are out in the middle of creation. I'm in Bragg Creek right now, which is about 20 or 30 kilometers west of Calgary. I'm actually in Bragg Creek itself, but the riverbed, as you can see, is dry, the water level is low, you can hear the creek rushing by over here and can see the trees that surround us and the change in elevation. We are just at the beginning of the foothills of the Rocky Mountains. It's a wonderful thing to be out here, especially since we've been talking about the creation as part of these sermons. Now, by way of review, last week we talked about how God is revealed to us through two major sources. We could call one the Book of God's Works, which would be the creation, and the Book of God's Words, which for Christians is, of course, the Bible. And so we made the observation that if God is revealed to us in these two ways, they need to be able to speak to us in harmony. You could say speaking really in one voice. That is to say that if there is contradiction and tension between the two, there needs to be some kind of a resolution in order for them both to be telling us about God. And then we also acknowledge that within the Bible, there is a development and an understanding of God there too. And so last week we looked at the book of Job, and suggested that the portrayal of God in that very early book of the Bible is not as complete as what we see revealed to us in Jesus coming up later in the Bible. Jesus reveals God to us in the flesh, and we were able to give thanks last week that the God that we serve is more like what we see in Jesus than what we see in Job. Now this morning we're going to continue in a similar vein with this conversation. And what I want to do is begin with us talking about the book of God's works, the creation, over against how things are sometimes said in the book of God's words, the Bible. Now, you might have heard it said, you might have said it yourself, I've said it in the past, that we live in a fallen world. Have you heard that before? Have you ever thought really about where that comes from? What is the source of that idea that we live in a fallen world? Well, let me suggest to you that we do find that from the book of God's words, and it's from the beginning. Now, we didn't read from Genesis this morning, but let me just very briefly give you this rundown. In Genesis chapter 1, we are given a creation story in which God takes a week to create the world. In Genesis chapter 2, we get a second creation story in which it's all done in one day. And then in Genesis chapter 3, we get an encounter that we have called the fall. And what happens here is Adam and Eve, the first two humans, are living in the Garden of Eden, and they're given permission by God to eat the fruit of any tree they want, except for the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. We aren't told how long after they're created that they actually give in to the temptation to eat that fruit, but that is what they do. And when they do that, there's an understanding that, of course, they have violated God's law, they have disobeyed God's instruction, they have rebelled against the authority of God, as it were, and God confronts them and has to deal with what they have done. And so, turning to the woman, to Eve, he says to her, "Because you have done this, you will now bear children in pain." That was Eve's consequence, because she disobeyed God. Now, when she would give birth, it would be painful. And this is extended now to every human woman on the planet. So for all of you women who are watching this video and have had kids before, and you recall the pain that you had in that childbirth, the reason it is painful is because Eve disobeyed God, and that's what God instituted would happen to her and to all women to come after her. The reason it's painful to give birth to children is because of the fall in Genesis chapter 3. Now, that's what the book of God's words says. How does that compare with what the book of God's works says? Well, the book of God's works, which is what we study with science, by the way, it's theology that we use to study the book of God's words. According to the book of God's works, the reason that childbirth is painful
is because as mammalian evolution has taken place over many millions of years and has come into the version exhibited in human beings over the past 100,000 to 300,000 years, the size of the baby that needs to be born out of the mother is relatively large compared to the space it needs to get through. Not to mention the amount of muscular contraction necessary has to be of a certain force that it causes a great deal of pain. There are even cases, as you may well know, that there are women who have died in childbirth. But that's how we evolved. And so there it is. That's the reason it's painful. Which explanation makes more sense? I mean, think about what the book of God's words is saying. Because Eve sinned a long time ago and disobeyed, God decided that from here on out, every woman would be in pain in childbirth, and some would even die. How does that compare with how you understand God to be revealed in Jesus? Let's switch to our attention to the man. God says to Adam, because you have done this, cursed is the ground because of you. Now thorns and thistles will grow up, and you will need to till the soil and work by the sweat of your brow so that you can eat the plants that are grown. What God is saying here is because of Adam's disobedience, we now have to work for a living. And indeed, there is a new kind of plant that has emerged. There was no mention of thorns and thistles before Adam sinned. But because of Adam's disobedience, now there's new plants, and these plants apparently are really annoying. There's nothing inherently beautiful about them. These are not part of the good creation. These are the result of sin, and they are meant to make life difficult for humans as they till the soil. That is what the fall describes in the book of God's words. How does this compare with the book of God's works? Well, when we look at the book of God's works, what we understand is when human beings, Homo sapiens, emerged in the evolutionary tree 100,000 to 300,000 years ago, we began as hunter-gatherers looking for animals and gathering berries and stuff for food, but soon found that agriculture was something that could be suitable to use. And so we learned how to plant gardens and how to plant crops and how to prepare the soil for it and to properly water it and irrigate it and fertilize it, and eventually had come to be able to grow our food rather than have to run all over the countryside trying to hunt it down. Was it difficult? Sure. Is it difficult today? Absolutely. But it is what it is. That's how it works. And sometimes there are other plants that don't contribute to the growth of our crops and we have to get rid of them. Of these two explanations, which one makes the most sense? I would suggest to you that the book of God's works is giving us a better picture of why children are born in pain and why it's often difficult to grow food than it is to say that it's because God wanted to hurt the creation because of human sin. Let's think about that for a minute too. God was causing the creation to be different, to be worse in the fall. Why would God do that? I mean, this is not new. I mean, one of the things that we also learn in the scriptures, this is in Romans chapter 5 with the Apostle Paul, is that it was because of human sin that death even entered the world. So prior to human sin, things didn't die. And in Romans chapter 8, he talks about how the creation was subject to futility because of the will of the one who subjected it. This idea that death is now part of our reality because of human sin. Well, okay, according to the book of God's words, that makes sense. If the earth is only created in a week or in a day, and Adam and Eve are living for a number of weeks or months maybe before they finally give in to temptation to sin, then nothing has had a chance to die, and oh look, now there's death because of that. Okay, we could see that. But that's only if that makes sense. What does the book of God's works tell us? Well, God created the universe 13.7 billion years ago, and 4.5 billion years ago, the world was formed, the earth, and there has been evolution of trees and plants and fish and birds and land animals, and resulting in Homo sapiens, and it's only been in the last nanosecond of geological time that human beings have shown up. This is a creation that the Bible tells us that God called was good, indeed very good. If human beings sin, well, even before that, we recognize that there's been a whole lot of death happening long before human beings showed up. There has been a cycle, the circle of life, this idea of something growing and dying and decaying and decomposing and creating nutrients for the next thing that emerges and grows and so on. There's been death before human beings sinned, long before human beings sinned. So there's a bit of a conflict. And then, coming back to that question, why would God hurt the creation because of human sin? Well, the only way that makes sense is if this very young earth was made for the purpose and pleasure of human beings. And then what's happening is God is saying to humans for having failed him, because you have done this, I am now going to reduce how good this place is for you. This place I built for you, this place I designed intentionally for you, is now not going to be as good as it should be because of your sin. That's the only way it makes sense that God would curse the earth. Even the flood story, it's because of the sinfulness of humanity that God brings around the flood, but even the animals are going to perish because of it. And so these animals that have done nothing wrong are destroyed because of human sin. The only way it makes sense is if the purpose for the creation is solely for the pleasure of humanity. But what does the book of God's works say? The earth has been around so long, long before human beings ever showed up. And it does not seem to make sense to think that somehow God really didn't care about it for all those billions of years. Didn't really matter to God. And it wasn't until human beings showed up that finally the purpose of the creation was coming about. It doesn't make sense. So what are we doing here? Am I trying to blow holes in the Bible? No. What I'm trying to do is illustrate that our revelation of God is something that comes to us from both of these sources. And that we have to understand that when we read the Bible, we are reading it because as a work that has been written by people 3,000 years ago, 2,000 years ago, and in between. People who have an ancient understanding of science. People who do not know all that we know now. And so anybody who writes anything can only write from their context and from their basis of understanding. So, if you understand that as far as you can tell, this earth was created right away and is created for humans, then such a story might make sense. And if all you know is it hurts to give birth, well, there's got to be a reason for it. It's easy to say, well, there must be a connection with what God has done. When we read the Bible, we need to keep that limitation of scientific knowledge in mind that the authors had. And their perspective needs to be in our minds as well. Otherwise, we draw weird conclusions. So let me ask that question again. Do we live in a fallen world? According to what Genesis 3 says, and the mechanism by which it plays out, we would have to say, well, no, actually. We do not live in a world tainted by human sin. We do not live in a world that somehow is less good because we've failed. We live in a world that has the cycle of life, and there's birth and death and birth and death, as there has been for billions of years, but that doesn't make it inherently bad. We don't live in a fallen world in that sense. We live in a beautiful world, a world that reflects God's glory and majesty and power, as the Apostle Paul says in Romans chapter 1. But on the other hand, do we live in a world that can certainly be affected by our selfishness and our exploitative nature and our consumerism? Do we live in a world that can be affected by our inward focused actions? Yes, indeed we do. And so pollution is evidence of that. Climate change is evidence of that. Species of animals that have gone extinct because human beings have been overhunting or overfishing different areas. Desertification because of us using up arable land. And even things where our agricultural land is getting reduced in size because we keep spreading the footprint of our city. Yes, indeed, we live in a world that is exhibiting evidence of what we could say was human sinful behavior. But the nature of nature itself, I would suggest, is not fallen. That scheme that we see in the Bible conflicts with what we see in the book of God's works in the creation. So we need to read the Bible with that in mind. Let's go back to this other concept of God, too, that we've been working on. I mentioned last week that Job, in chapter 23 there, makes the statement that he believes and he's confident that God will not contend with him in his power. And we mentioned how Job was terrified of God, and his idea was to want to have an audience with God as though he was speaking to a divine judge in a divine courtroom so that he could make a case for himself. Well, we come to chapter 38 of Job, and what do we see happen? You might recall these words that we heard this morning already. From a whirlwind, God speaks. And when he begins to speak, guess what? He contends with Job on the basis of his power. He does the very thing that Job was sure God wouldn't do. That's exactly what God does. In chapter 38 and 39 and 40 and 41 of the book of Job, God begins by saying, "Who is this that darkens counsel by words without knowledge? Gird up your loins like a man. I will question you, and you shall declare to me. Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Tell me if you have understanding. Who measured its dimensions? Surely you know. Can you put the constellations in place? Are you able to guide their path? Do you know how the heavens work? Can you make it rain? Are you able to control the weather and the lightning and tell it where to go?" Over and over and over and over again, this is what God is said to say to Job in these last four chapters of the book. Basically, God just bludgeons Job with those words until finally all Job can do in chapter 42 is go, you're right, I'm sorry, I spoke out of turn, I've been unwise, I've been talking too much, I shouldn't be questioning you, you are God, I realize that, I'm just going to shut up now. And that's the audience Job gets with God. When Job is simply trying to figure out, why have all my kids been killed? Why has life gone terribly for me? What is going on? What have I done? That's the answer he gets from God in the book of Job. Yes, at the very end, God decides to restore everything to Job. And so he says to Job, you know, this is great. You've actually been faithful to me. Right on. I proved my point to the Satan. And now Ha-Satan has to deal with the fact that you've been faithful. So I'm going to reward you now with twice as many kids as you have before. In fact, your daughters are going to be the most beautiful in the land. So you won't even remember those kids that you lost before. And you can have twice as much property and twice as much wealth. And now life will be fantastic. Yay. Really? Really? Is that how God operates? Well, according to the writers of the book of Job, yes, that is what they thought about how God works. But what do we see in Jesus? In our gospel reading today, Jesus is there with his disciples, his apostles, and two of his closest apostles, James and John, their two brothers. They come up to Jesus and probably in a way without wanting anyone else to know, they come up and say, "Jesus, we want you to do whatever we ask for you to do." And so Jesus says, "All right, what do you want me to do for you?" And they ask, "When your kingdom gets all set up, would you please grant that the two of us could sit at your right hand and your left hand? In other words, can we have the places of honor in your new kingdom?" And Jesus, showing great grace, I would suggest, says ultimately, "You know, that's not actually up to me." But then the other 10 apostles learned that James and John were asking these questions, and of course, they're not very impressed with them at all. So Jesus calls all of them around, and he says to them, "Look at guys, you know that the leaders of the Gentiles, you know, all the people outside of Israel, okay? The leaders of the Gentiles, everybody knows who has authority there, and they lord it over them, even becoming tyrants. This is not the way it is to be with you. Instead, anyone who wants to become great must become a servant of all." And then he goes on to say, "Just as even the Son of Man," Jesus is saying, that's me, "just as I did not come to be served, but to serve and to give my life as a ransom for many. Jesus, who reveals God to us in the flesh, says that the way that I operate is not like any of that, and you better believe I have the authority. I don't. Instead, I serve and I give of myself. What was God said to do in the book of Job? He lords it over Job. Who is this that darkens counsel with words without knowledge? Stand up like a man. I will question you and you will answer me. All God does is lord it over Job. And yet Jesus says that's not the way to operate in light of what God is like. In fact, that is not how God operates. In fact, Jesus is saying, look at me and see how I work. The picture of God that we get later in the Bible through Jesus tells us that there's something wrong with the image of God that we see in the book of Job. So once again, this morning, I don't want to give you the idea that I'm trying to blow holes in the Bible. Not at all. What I am instead wanting us to understand is that we need to read the Bible with an understanding of its ancient authorship and the time and place in which it was written, and the limitations of understanding that people had at that point, and the fact that they are doing their best to understand how God works. And it's not until Jesus shows up that we get this really solid picture in the flesh of what God's character is like, which then has to alter and change the portrayal and understanding of God that we saw earlier in the Hebrew Bible. And even, I would suggest, some of the things that are said of God after that in the New Testament might need to reflect more on what Jesus actually demonstrated. And now here it is 2,000 years since, and we have gained more knowledge of the book of God's works, which comes to work with the book of God's words, which also includes our understanding of God through Jesus. God reveals God's self to us. God speaks to us through what has been made. And God continues to demonstrate God's love and compassion and God's power and God's beauty in everything that is around us, and how God communicates to us in what is written, and how God communicates to us in Jesus, and how God communicates to us through our interaction with one another as we endeavor to live according to that example that we have been given. This morning I realize I've asked a bunch of questions and made some statements that probably make you really wonder. If that's the case, let me invite you to write those questions down, give me a call, email, whatever. Let's get a chance to talk this through a bit, because I'm sure that some of the things that I've said have been pretty provocative. But I want us to be able to embrace both books of God's revelation and bring them together and see how we can see how God is revealed to us now, in this day, in this time, among us, in this world, of which we are a part and in which we live. The world was created for God's pleasure, not ours. But thanks be to God, we get to enjoy it. And I pray that you would. Amen.